Hello everyone, welcome back to Tantra's Mantra, where we go behind the beyond tech news headlines. I'm your host Prakash Sangam, founder and principal at Tantra Analyst. Today we are going to talk about recently held WWDC, the Apple's annual developer conference. Apple announced quite a few things there, most of which we will discuss today. They started off with the plan to harmonize the versions and the naming across their OSs, operating systems, which I think is a good idea. It removes a lot of confusion, you know, between their iOS, iPadOS, and watchOS, and so on. And they're calling all of the upcoming revisions are 26. So it's iOS 26 or iPad 26 and so on, you know, indicating this is for 2026, I'm assuming. And they also introduced new visual design element called Liquid Glass, which is this translucent adaptive treatment of the screen, icons, and more. This is this will be utilized across their software and across all the OSs. I think it looked really nice when they showed. I have not actually checked it on a real device. But from the looks, it looks pretty nice, neat, clean, and very modern looking. We'll see how it actually looks on the devices. I have not seen myself on the actual device. And also, of course, Apple Intelligence was a central theme to all of the announcements they did at the event. Key thing was, instead of talking about Apple Intelligence or the AI as such, they focused more on the benefits the Apple Intelligence brings to the different applications and the improvement in user experience, which I think is very smart and the right way to do, rather than doing technology talk for the technology's sake, which I was really impressed with. And I think a big thing from AI point of view was they're opening up their on-device LLM to all of their app developers, which that again is a very smart move, I think. Rather than they just trying to develop everything on their own, they're letting the app developer ecosystem develop a nice, innovative, hopefully very new user experiences and applications on their LLM. Having said that, many of the new features, at least I felt, were very incremental, not earth-shattering or nothing huge. And many of the features were actually available on Android, either by Google or through Android OEM ecosystem. Of course, obviously, you know, the secret sauce of Apple is how they put all of them together across the board for very seamless user experience. That, I think, is key for sure. And I think smartphones had a long list of features. Apart from that, I think iPad OS new features were very interesting. I think they're interesting from the point of view that most of the time they had a clear demarcation between what iPad can do, a tablet can do versus computer can do. But I think with some of the features, especially the windowing features they announced, it's kind of blurring that line. So iPads are kind of, you know, almost entering into the PC functionality space. And I think there's some big misses as well. Of course, Siri was a big miss. They only talked about it once or twice, more in an apologetic way, saying that if we are working on it, we are not ready to talk about it yet. Maybe we'll talk about it in the next year. And the other thing was agentic AI. I mean, most of the Apple Intelligence thing they announced or discussed were within the app, you know, nothing of the sort where there are this multi-step complex functions which run across applications. I mean, if you ask me, compared to other OEMs, they control hardware, software, the full ecosystem. They can run those multi-application, multi-step functional agentic AI kind of functions much better and much easier than their competitors, which I did not see discussed too much. Most of these were within the same. Maybe it is multi-step, but within the same app. You know, to discuss all of these things, I have my friend here with me, Leonard Lee from NextCurve. And the reason I usually bring him on my show is lot of cases we don't agree and we debate. So it's not a simple discussion, we debate. So I'm sure there'll be enough of that today as well. Leonard, welcome.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me on again.
All right. So yeah, I mean, you know, you don't need introduction to our audience. You've been on the show many times.
Yeah, really? I don't need an introduction. Are you sure? Okay.
Yeah, at least to my audience, you've been a few times, enough times, I would say.
Yeah, it's great to be back on. So why don't we get into it then?
Absolutely. So let's start with what was your initial impression of the event and on the announcements?
Yeah, I thought it was a typical casual Apple in a lot of ways. In regards, I mean, you made the comment about Apple Intelligence. I think it was more about expectations versus what they actually were focusing on. And I think they were trying to position and help developers understand what Apple Intelligence will be able to do to enhance their applications, right? Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, the whole foundation model, opening up of that was a big deal. Mm-hmm. It's an important move on their part. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in terms of the UI unification that they're doing, or this new UI that you mentioned,
mm-hmm. Liquid Glass.
I think, you know how tough that is, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
It's very, very tough to unify the user experience as well as the design across a portfolio of devices. And I mean, just think about the Android Windows universe, right? How difficult it is to harmonize across that, right? You might even say it's almost impossible. But Apple is able to do that. That's one of the big advantages that they have. And so while I know a lot of people were trivializing it, it's actually a huge strategic and competitive differentiation that they have. And so it's not something to sneeze at or laugh at. It's actually something that the entire industry envies and is an advantage that Apple continues to benefit from. I think they did a really good job of, threading Apple Intelligence in a way that was more developer-centric in terms of, and that's why I think maybe from a user perspective, you didn't see as many features. It was really more of, hey, here's the framework, and then here's the tools and the APIs and the tooling within our SDKs as well as our IDEs that will enable you to infuse Apple Intelligence into your applications and really, you know, the on-device capabilities, right? And so if we think about it in terms of the on-device AI, I think they're very advanced and way ahead. And one of the things that I found pretty encouraging is there was no suggestion that their private secure cloud had any issues. In fact, that's probably one of the most important artifacts in their Apple Intelligence architecture that allows them to harmonize the personalization and the AI user experience across devices, right? And so under the hood, there's a lot of advantages that they have. It's just that I think a lot of folks just don't appreciate it or they don't even understand it. So anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, Liquid Glass, I mean, it is look and feel. They are basically playing to their advantage, right? They have
a
cohesive, fully controlled ecosystem in terms of look and feel across all of their Apple products. They want to have it same and they are using that to their advantage. Others, like it or not, cannot have it because they don't have the full ecosystem or they don't have both controls of software, hardware, and the app ecosystem. So, and then in terms of benefiting that, there are a lot of, intangible benefits in terms of use of like stickiness. If you're very familiar with one user experience or user interface, it's very easy for you to just pick another Apple product and have that flow rather than jumping between interfaces, right? I mean, that's, I think, kind of playing a lot into increased popularity of Mac nowadays, right? People are using, iPhones.
Yeah.
And then they say, maybe I should try out Mac and move there. And there's tangible and intangible benefits of having that kind of common identity and common look and feel across the devices. So, but from a specific feature point of view, I think it's not that significant. It is very hard to do, I'm sure. And it's even harder to make sure all other app ecosystem is applying to that as well, right? Because it is very dynamic, whether it is dark or the light in terms of color scheme, how the transparency works. You got to make sure the background is good enough that the text that is or anything that is overlaid is clearly visible and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a couple of examples where readability might be an issue. We'll see how it goes. But I agree, it is a very difficult task.
Mm-hmm.
And they are doing it because they are the only who can do it. And I'm sure there are tangible and intangible benefits to that.
Yeah, I mean, and there's the advantage of cross form factor or device portability of all of that. I mean, you know, actually, if you think about it, one of the most powerful slides they presented was, you know, iOS 25, iPad OS 25, Mac OS 25, Vision Pro, you know, or Vision OS 25. The thing is that a developer only can develop once.
Yeah.
And the whole stack will adapt that application for any device. And so think about all the time that a developer can save.
Yeah.
And, you know, how much lower their investment in developing for the Apple ecosystem will be. And so that's extremely powerful. And so I've read a lot of press stuff. People just don't get that, right? Simply how powerful that is. And for end users or the, you know, folks who are using Apple products and have, any number of them in their daily lives, the advantage they have, again, is that continuity, right?
Yeah.
And so continuity is such an important concept and differentiator for Apple that cannot be underestimated, but oftentimes is discounted, right? Because people are focused on, the iPhone, is it better than this device? But the whole is much more compelling than any single element of that ecosystem experience.
Yeah, and I think the difference in opinion or perception of value for this continuity is different for tech-savvy folks versus not so much savvy folks, right? If you're tech-savvy, then probably you know what you're doing, how things work, and then you don't value this commonality that much, right? But if you're somebody not that tech-savvy, I mean, I have to follow these four steps which look and feel this way on my one device, be much easier for me to do it on another device, right? So rather than totally different colors, totally different scheme and so on, right?
Sure.
So that is one level. And then from an app developer, it's a huge advantage.
Yeah.
Very, very visible for them to really realize.
Yeah, but I mean, if you really are to look at it from an ecosystem perspective and what are the advantages versus others, right? Comparatively speaking, I mean, I think it is really challenging to deal with the differentiation that the Apple ecosystem has. And so that's a huge message. Like going back to, again, this whole harmonization of the whatever the versioning scheme.
Yeah.
I think there's a huge statement in that. A subliminal, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is where a lot of Apple's competitors need to really contemplate. There's nothing you can do to change it, right? But in terms of being able to compete with Apple, what would be sort of that optimal play, especially if you're an OEM that's looking to emulate or take advantage or of some of the elements of what Apple's ecosystem play is, right? I mean, obviously it's difficult for them to emulate exactly, but you know, it's something to contemplate, because if you don't recognize the advantages that Apple has, then you really rightly can't come up with a countervailing strategy or a strategy that can meet the challenge of what Apple brings to the table. So,
I mean, some way for trying to do it, like, for example, Samsung's UI 7, 8 or whatever, they try to, club together and then have the same across at least smartphones and tablets, at least, right? But because the OS is coming from different players for different devices, laptops, it is from Windows, on phones, it is from Android. And then since there are two separate players, you cannot have commonality in terms of versioning, for example, right? But they're going to the extent they're possible. Okay. And then Siri, right? As I mentioned, it was a big mess. I mean, if you frankly look, right? I mean, obviously, AI hype is everywhere. All people, like all players, if you ask me, because of Siri's presence, good or bad, for so many years, Siri should have replaced it, Apple, in such a strong position because they had all the elements to it, from a customer interfacing perspective. Mm-hmm. If they had played it well, Siri should be their frontline tool to attack and win in the AI race. Whereas now it is proving to be a problem child, an Achilles heel, if you want to call it, and they're kind of more apologetic in terms of where they are with Siri versus utilizing its potential. So I'm really surprised how and where then why they dropped the ball on it.
Yeah, well, no, I think this is where they may have made a misstep. I think it's pretty clear that they have a different standard for what safe and responsible AI is, right? I mean, they did make a misstep. The whole snafu with the BBC news, right, where they did news summarization and it was hallucinating stories and headlines. That wasn't very smart of them. I think very early on, Apple clearly mentioned that they were going to take a thoughtful approach. Evidently, they've made some, dubious calls, like the news summaries. But AI is hard. And I have to be honest, I don't think anyone's ahead. Google, Microsoft, all these guys, their tools are not that great. I don't know why they're not held to the same standard as everyone is holding that Apple holds to themselves. And so I'm not too surprised that Siri got held back. To get reliable AI that doesn't hallucinate and create a potential to disrupt in a negative way your life, I mean, that's very, very tough. And the illusion is that somehow it's easy or it's here or someone else has it. I have to give Apple credit for not putting out junk. And the fact of the matter is also from their perspective, they're taking more of an asset light, what I call an asset light approach to AI. They don't want to buy GPUs. They don't want to host a massively expensive model or a AI service that they can't monetize, that they're going to lose tons of money on. And let's be honest about AI monetization. Google is not getting paid by Samsung. Google is apparently paying Samsung. So Samsung is monetizing AI from Google. So why would Apple want to get in that game? It doesn't make any sense, right? And then also, the world model approach that they have, sort of this two-tiered model for their AI strategy, makes a lot of sense because they're in many markets, including China, right? And so not to tie down their AI strategy with one particular model, whether it's Google's or Qwen or DeepSeek or whatever and maybe in the Middle East, there's going to be a new one. Maybe Humane or Frontieric is going to create a new world model for the Middle East. maybe it's Arab language world model. Why would you want to pigeonhole your operating system if you're Apple to any particular world model? You keep that flexible, kind of like what Perplexity does, right? Mm-hmm. And so we hear all this talk about, hey, they should buy Perplexity. It's like, why? Why? Because what Perplexity does is really not that difficult. And all they're doing is they're allowing you to, kind of like Bedrock, Amazon's Bedrock, allow you to plug and play different models. So it kind of doesn't make sense, right? So this anxiety about Apple being behind because Siri doesn't work or they don't have a Gemini, really, at the end of the day, doesn't make any sense.
So there are two parts to it. One, in my view. One, obviously, they're going, as you mentioned, asset light. If at all they invest, they'll only invest in the on-device model, which they have, and an open app developer. That makes perfect sense, right? I mean, that's what Google is doing as well, and Qualcomm has been pushing for that kind of a model for a long time. No questions there. Maybe using Siri for that, if Siri was in a good shape, would have been better, but okay. Whatever.
Yeah.
And the second thing is cloud-based model. I mean, I think probably they did a lot of calculations and see in terms of monetizing opportunities, it is better to utilize the models out there, be it OpenAI, Google, and if it is Perplexity and others, Anthropic. They said they started with OpenAI, but they're open to all other models. This is my feeling. We'll see how that goes. I think at some point of they realize, depending on somebody else, reaching your future to maybe multiple people, but to somebody else's efforts may not be the smartest move in the long run. I think sooner or later, they will do their own model as well, because they have full control of their data, where it goes, how it is utilized, who it uses it. I think of all the people out there, I think they're in the best position, if you ask me, to have their own model, which is fully controlled by them, only all devices with or only ecosystem, not giving to anybody else. People would believe them more than anybody else because nobody has that kind of control that they have. So let's keep our fingers crossed.
It's complex.
But I think they'll find that doing their own model for their own customers, on which they have full control, hardware, software, and experience, will be beneficial for them.
Yeah. I mean, they do. I mean, it's Apple Intelligence. It's not like they don't have their own model, right? So they do have.
I'm saying it's only on device now, right? I mean, I'm saying off device, on the cloud, they don't have their own model. They use OpenAI.
No, they have the language model in private secure cloud. So they do have it there. It's offload. But you're right. They don't have a world model, and that's where they're providing choice. And it makes sense because you don't even know whether or not OpenAI is going to be here next year. For all we know, they might disappear. And that goes for everyone else. And so
you know your customers the best. You know what they need. You know how to monetize it. And you have all their data if you want to use it to train your model. So I think they are in the best position to really come up with a very secure model, which is tied from all ends.
And it takes time. It's hard. Correct, I'm telling you, even with the agentic stuff, people don't even understand the security risks. I mean, seriously, they are so devoid of understanding the security issues. MCP doesn't solve stuff, okay, people? It really doesn't. So all these buzzwords, they're just really concepts that have not been tested, and folks are just, they are disregarding privacy and security. They haven't even started to have that conversation. It's a big, big issue. And if Apple's working on it, it's going to take them time. If anyone else is working on it, it's going to take them time. And so
I'll give a quick example, right? So, if you look at all the Apple Intelligence features that they talked about, could be multi-step, but within the same app. I did not see anything that works across the app, right? And then others are not doing it either. You don't want to give access from one app to other.
Oh, yeah.
But if you look at Apple, if they want, they can make apps work together in a safe and secure, privacy sensitive way.
Yeah.
So they could be the first to bring
impactful,
effective, multi-step, complex agentic AI applications and features work across the applications, which I'm surprised they're not done yet.
Right. Well, they have, here's the thing, they have the framework. So everyone says, oh, they're so behind on AI. Actually, they do have agentic, and they've mentioned it as, you know, number one, there's app intents. Then there's this like sort of weird thing that they've done with Spotlight, as well as, you know, shortcuts, where there's a user-facing agentic mechanism that they have, okay, where you can, as a user, compose, quote-unquote, an agent. These are like really automations. And at the end of the day, that's all these agentic AIs are turning out to be anyways, okay? Despite what marketing departments will tell you that these things are like autonomous and blah, 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 they're really not.
They're not right now, but they have the potential. Initially not, but they have the potential.
Yeah, but potential doesn't matter. It's who actually has a framework and who has the tooling that allows the user to actually now at least tap into this early phase of agentic AI. Under the hood, the foundation model, I forget the last word, is a foundation model something.
Framework.
In Xcode, you can actually compose. It's not elegant, right? But you can, what you can do is you can load in a number of different classes and you can start to compose an agent. But this is very much directed to the developer, right? So this is a developer trying to develop an application. You can do pretty complex stuff. They even have the concept of tools. So if you start to listen to these folks talk about agentic frameworks and agentic, you know, tooling, there's this concept of tools, right? This isn't MCP. MCP is a level underneath that can, you know, help you plug into, let's say, whatever system, right? But you can have these tools, you can compose these tools, define these tools that can incorporate Apple intelligence in them. And then you can, I don't know, if you feel like it, you can use MCP or proprietary APIs to go and tap and, you know, make requests to whatever other services, whether it's data or it's a functional service, and then create your quote unquote agent, right? Yeah. So actually all the stuff is there. It's just, they didn't really talk about it in the keynote.
Yeah.
And then, so when you hear all the reporting about this stuff, everybody missed out on this stuff. It's like, no, it's there. And, but the tricky part is, it's presented in a way where if you really don't know this agentic AI stuff, you wouldn't know that it's there.
Yeah, I agree. Like the Spotlight, I think is, it's, I mean, they did not mention, they could have mentioned it's, that's agentic AI, right? It's a, it worked across, but that is only on the Mac, not on, iOS.
Which one's that?
Spotlight is on Mac.
No, they have it on iOS too. They have shortcuts on iOS. They have it everywhere. See, that's the thing. That's the thing. That they have their agentic game down.
All right. So moving on to iPad OS. I mean, other than iOS, obviously, that I think was a big, right? So,
oh my
so
God.
I think, you know, so far, as I mentioned in my monologue, you could see a distinct line that the iPads will not cross. For example, Windows was one. You know, but that windowing, the moment I saw it, said, well, this is becoming a computer now or a laptop now, right? So
yeah,
I think they are kind of at a point now, you know, we cannot, you know, draw a line. So I think that is big.
I agree with you, man. I just wrote, iPad has lost its identity with a Mac OS like iPad OS. Yeah, this windowing thing, you know, I think they really started to lose their path. Okay, they got started getting off of the right path when they introduced the trackpad and the Magic Keyboard or whatever that thing's called. And then they you start to have like point and click. It's like, hey, this is a tablet. And, you know, you need to have a certain kind of design discipline to so that the product evolves in a certain direction that's optimal for its purpose. Right. And now it's starting to really get confused with the laptop. I agree with you totally. And I don't think it's a good thing. I think it's like,
I think they're doing it because there is definite demand now. Right. I mean, if you look at this
white
laptop that everybody has. I mean, you want that kind of capability, but in a form factor which is very slim, thin, a tablet.
Then we can go back to those, remember those micro or the, what were those things called? The really, really small laptops.
Netbooks.
Netbooks, yeah.
Netbook. A big failure. Yeah, but these are netbooks. I mean, they had like what, the Celeron processor? They were very weak. They were depending on network for all functionality rather than simple tasks. I think it is a realization. It is more like a Surface, right? Not the Surface lineup or the Surface laptops. I think there is a demand for them, especially at the productivity and executive level. So I think they are addressing the demand in my view. But I agree with you, the iPad is kind of losing its identity. So maybe one way for them would be, you know, iPads, this whatever, PC-like iPads, take the extremely thin and, the lower end of their laptop portfolio. And then Macs are basically, very strong with strong processing capabilities and very beefy processor and so on. Maybe that's how they do it.
Yeah. Right? So let me bring something up that I've observed.
Yeah.
So for instance, they got rid of the smart keyboard, which I think was brilliant. It was a brilliant piece of hardware.
Yeah.
And you know, I've been an iPad user from the very, very beginning. In fact, I had a 3G iPad when cellular was first introduced to the product. Right.
Okay.
There's a couple of companies that get it more than Apple now. The name of those companies are Honor and Huawei.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to MWC, both of those companies, including I think Xiaomi, they had a smart keyboard, not the Magic keyboard that looks like a full blown thing. They actually are preserving the essence of what the iPad is better than Apple is now. And that should actually bother Apple because they actually have the discipline to evolve that product and take on the mantle. And we have to also remember Huawei is one of very few companies that actually has a operating system that will go from whatever vision Huawei thing that they have, glasses and watches, all the and IoT devices, actually a lot more than what Apple has. It will transverse everything.
Yeah.
And so this should really bother Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And then this should really, really bother everybody else, right? Anyway, I think not understanding something simple like an iPad and its purpose and not being able to evolve it in what you might call an optimal way is kind of a red flag for me, honestly.
Yep.
And that's because I'm an iPad lover. I love the iPad.
I think it is basically they're addressing a market need. I have a strong feeling Honor and Huawei will just follow Apple. It's easy for them to do rather than, you know, fend for their own.
I don't know. At this point, I don't think Huawei needs to follow anybody. They can do their own thing.
Yeah, they can. But and we'll see. I have a feeling they will follow. Because I think I see there is a definite need. They don't need that huge $2,500 heavy MacBook most of the time if you're a busy executive.
And
at the same time, you need all the capabilities of a PC, especially the Windows, right?
Okay. I think you have a good point. So
okay. good. So then next, Mac OS. I mean, I'm not a big Mac fan. I know. I'll let you talk about the software features. I know. I think they were pretty light as well in my view. But I think they're saying this is their last OS with the Intel support. I think that is significant. Oh.
That's pretty much about it then, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought more than, you know, we'll talk about Vision Pro in a bit or OS.
Yeah.
But I thought that was the biggest headline, quite honestly.
Okay.
Right. And then, you know, Mac is just there to be part of the harmonization.
Yeah.
it's But it's great, right? I mean, if you are an in the Apple ecosystem, all this is just, it is actually kind of exciting if you detach yourself from some expectations that I think are really misguided going into WWDC, right? I mean, I do think that users are going to enjoy the enhanced continuity and consistency of UI experience. And then also for developers, I think, you know, maybe for the developers is some of the enhancements to the gaming. They mentioned Metal 4. So there's enhancements there. So we'll see whether or not, you know, Mac gaming will start to take some hold. But it sounds like they have some good features coming out that emulate, you know, what NVIDIA is doing in terms of NVIDIA has with DLSS and stuff like that with, you know, predicting frames and all that stuff. So yeah, anyways, those are highlights, but you pointed out the most important one.
I did really like the search feature.
Spotlight?
Yeah. Spotlight, I think I really loved it. And also I loved continuity between Mac and iPhone. I think we can do much more than what they're doing. I mean, this is similar to what others are doing, like between Windows and Android phones, right? The other, like, you know, we talk to Lenovo, we talk to Samsung. They are doing similar things.
Do you want me to be honest, man?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's not as good as like what Lenovo has.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
and it's not as good as what I've seen with Samsung either. It's a little bit clunky. So Apple, you need to do a little bit of a better job. The thing that they have an advantage on is the other continuity features are really good, right? They're very solid.
Yeah.
This is more of a nice to have in my view. It's not like a core thing. I don't use it much, actually.
I use continuity, I mean, because I'm working from home and in front of my laptop all the time. I prefer not to use my phone at all. And then with Samsung and with Lenovo, I'm able to do it. In Lenovo's case, I mean, they're two different companies itself, right? They're working with Android. It's not even the same device. The amount of continuity they can do, I think Apple could do so much better and so much more, which they are not doing. I don't know what the reason is, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with like Samsung and Lenovo and others are packing a lot of the continuity things into that integration, right? Whereas Apple hasn't really had to do that because continuity is actually around the smartphone. It doesn't need to actually be interfaced directly. Because it's more, continuity is more of a fabric of the operating system, right? It's not a device to device type of interface. So it's different.
Yeah, but they could, I mean.
Yeah, they could. It would be better. That's where they need to do their homework. Yeah.
They could, do much more and kind of could be even differentiating and making sticky that, if you have a Apple, even grudgingly, have to go buy a Mac, right? They can actually make it happen if they want.
But it's clunky and it's not consistent and reliable. It's goofy.
Okay, so Vision Pro, Vision OS. That also, I think it was very incremental. They had like what, spent 5 minutes? What's the big deal?
Oh, come on. Do you even have one? I have one.
Don't have one, but again, the amount of time they spent on explaining it tells me how much more they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, some of it is really, really kind of cool. Like some of the spatial stuff that they're doing, they're talking about where you do conversions, that's actually a really big deal.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people talk about, well, you know, how come they don't have content? They don't have content. I've been saying for a long time, and I actually talked about this on your podcast.
Yeah.
This is about creating your own spatial content, right? Yeah. And one of the great things that they introduced last year was the 2D to 3D conversion, right? Yeah. And so these new spatial experiences now, they're now bringing to a home screen of the, the iPhone, right? And Mac and everything else.
Yeah, even the Photos app has it now.
Yeah.
Basically, the 2D pictures,
right?
Too much, but a little bit like 3D pictures, you know, when you move the phone around and such. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then you have that parallax effect, which is, so it's interesting that, you know, now a lot of the themes from Vision OS and Vision Pro are coming to the other devices. And so there's a lot of immersive elements that are and influences that are actually a fabric across all the devices, which I think was that's actually a pretty big deal. People might think it's pretty trivial, but no, it is a big deal because this whole concept of immersive is core to the Vision Pro and Apple's XR strategy. Yeah. And the other thing is the sharing stuff, man. The sharing is so horrible on the Vision Pro because it is geared toward being an individual device.
Yeah, yeah.
But with these new updates, you can have groups using it.
Correct. Yeah, yeah.
You can do a lot more sharing and collaboration.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be helpful because, you know, the thing is the device is so expensive. It's not an individual device. It should be a household device, right?
Even within enterprises, right? It's very expensive to afford one for every individual user, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it has to be a shared device. And the utility is, I mean, a laptop you use whatever 100% of the time you're at work, but you cannot use it more than 2-3 hours at a stretch. So yeah, it makes sense. Okay. Good, good. So again, it was a great discussion. As usual, I bring you on my show because it's a debate. It's not kumbaya that we all agree on everything.
No, it's not even kumbaya when you and I are together. That's what's great. That's what I love it. I love it.
You know, so that, you know, our audience get multiple perspectives and diversity of views, not just one that they are beholden.
Yeah. No, I really appreciate you and the perspective you bring, Prakash. I really appreciate you bringing me on this episode so that we can have an argument. It's fun.
Indeed. All right. Thank you again for coming to the show, man.
Absolutely.
All right. So, folks, that's all we have for now. I hope you found this discussion informative and useful. If so, please hit like and subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening this on. I'll be back soon with another episode putting light on another interesting tech subject. Bye-bye for now.